Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here on this Monday. Thank you for your continuing commitment to give common sense a comeback. Lots to get to today. Coming up, we're going to discuss, I got this tip from a viewer. You know, there are a lot of COVID policies I've pushed back against, mandates, et cetera. But there's a lot of them where, you know, I get it. I get the political motivation for having them in place, like the ongoing vaccine mandate at the state level. Like, I get that the governor thinks that it's about obedience. It's about politics. It's about optics. I mean, I don't agree with it, but I can put myself in his brain and try to justify it that way. But gosh, this one, there's no justification for it. There's no justification for it. It has to do with a policy at a local university. So we'll discuss that coming up. Plus, a new bill in Olympia. This just came across my radar. If it passes, it would create a commission to look at the issue of domestic extremism. Now, do I think domestic extremism and domestic terrorism is an important issue that exists? Of course. But as I read the bill, I can't help but think that it would ignore the most obvious culprit of domestic extremism in Washington state. Plus, an update on lying Clyde Shavers, the Washington state representative who got his job after misleading voters about his military service and about his work history. A little update on a new committee assignment that Clyde Shavers has been blessed with by Democratic leadership in Olympia. Plus, younger people, a new study shows, younger people are on an independent streak. This is something I've predicted. I think it's going to be true. I think you have this really polarized country. Young people see a system that's not working at all and certainly not working for them. And I think we are going to have a movement toward independence. And so we'll read the results of that study. But first, I want to start with a story that was really bumming me out over the weekend. Because I think it's so counterproductive to what we're trying to accomplish in this movement and mission to bring common sense back into the conversation in news and in politics. So if you guys saw it, this happened in San Francisco. And there is a business owner who is out cleaning the sidewalks, and there is a homeless woman out on the sidewalk, and he starts spraying her down with a hose. So apparently this guy owns a San Francisco art gallery where this happened, and he later, you know, made a statement about this on camera. And he basically said, look, yeah, I sprayed her, shouldn't have done it. But he talked about his kind of growing frustration over this problem, having gone to the city many, many times. No one's helping him. His business is struggling. And so the way he explained it is this was done in some sort of moment of intense frustration.
Of course, I didn't want to spray her with the hose. And my mind would not have done that if this hadn't been constantly exacerbated over and over and over. But I find it hard to apologize when we've had no help on the situation by taking her to some sort of help for psychiatric evaluation.
And look, I have empathy for that business owner. I do. How many times have we spoken to business owners in downtown Seattle who are dealing with an unprecedented situation when it comes to the open air drug markets, to the homeless crisis? You know, we've had on the owner of Piroshki several times. They're just trying to make a living. And they have a local government, and this is true in Seattle, in Portland, up and down California. You have local governments who are not only, I mean, condoning, but also enabling, actively enabling that kind of behavior. And I can't even put myself in the shoes of a business owner whose livelihood is being ruined because of it. But, you know, I commented on an Instagram video of this incident with the spraying down, and I just said, that's really effed up. Because, I mean, to me, regardless of how frustrated you are, you don't spray another human being down with a hose. But beyond that, it also is not helpful at all to the conversation we're trying to have and the coalition we're trying to build of people who have common sense and who have empathy for people who are living on the streets. And I think it undercuts so much of that because you have people who, for those of us who really think the homeless crisis is a drug crisis, who have really tried to take elected leaders to task for failing to fix it. You know, we get called NIMBYs, not in my backyard. We get accused of hating the homeless, which just isn't true. But when you have a video like this, then you have folks on the other side of that argument who will point to it and say, yeah, you just hate the homeless. Look at this video of this guy spraying a woman with a hose. And so a video like this and an action like this does so much to damage the work that we've all been doing. And it really bums me out. It bums me out because I don't think it's a good thing to do to a fellow human, but it also bums me out because it undercuts so much of what we're trying to do. And I was really surprised by some of the responses to my comments. Somebody wrote, no, it's not, responding to me saying it's really effed up. Live on a public sidewalk, get cleaned with a hose like a public sidewalk. I mean, that's a terrible thing to say about another human being. Another person said, invite them to sleep in front of your house or your business then. I guarantee you do the same. No, I wouldn't. I would never spray someone down with a hose. And if you think that that's productive, if you think what he did is somehow going to make the situation in San Francisco better, it's not. It's going to make it worse. Because again, it's going to divide the community between those who claim the moral high ground and think that anyone who complains about the homeless crisis hates the homeless. So many comments like that. There was like 100 responses to my comment saying that's messed up, that this guy would spray this woman. How? It's better than the alternative. What's the alternative? This response to me, nobody agrees with you. Invite them to your business then, libtard, calling me a libtard for saying you shouldn't spray someone down with a hose. Losing your ability to provide for yourself because of shitty city policy and greedy city officials is really what's effed. And look, I agree. I don't think that those two things are mutually exclusive. I think that you can believe that what this business owner is faced with is really messed up. But it's not that homeless woman's fault per se. You know, we know that so many people who are on the streets are severely mentally ill, in the throes of a drug addiction. And yeah, he might have asked her to move a bunch of times, but she's obviously not in her right mind, or she wouldn't be living on the street surrounded by trash. I know who he's mad at is the government, and he should be mad at the government in San Francisco for letting it get this bad. But again, for people who were upset that I would be outraged that he'd spray her with a hose, what do you think, what's the end game there? How do you think that helps our conversation? How do you think that helps move things along? How do you think that helps bring people into this fold of saying, yeah, we need to do something about this. This isn't working. We need to take serious action. Don't create enemies out of people who are this close to being on our side of this issue. This is not going to help our cause at all. And that's what I'm trying to say. So we've been talking about Clyde Shavers. I mean, frankly, we've been talking about Clyde Shavers and George Santos. George Santos, the lying congressman from New York, and Clyde Shavers, the lying state representative from Washington, who said he worked aboard a nuclear submarine, didn't, felt the need to, for some reason, inflate his military service. He was in the Navy. That's great. He could have left it at that. Also said he was an attorney. He isn't. He hasn't passed the bar. He did go to Yale, though. Could have just left it at that. Yeah, I graduated from Yale and I served my country in the Navy. That's awesome. So the inflation from Clyde Shavers makes no sense. So anyway, Democrats in Washington state, you know, while Democrats nationally just rail against George Santos, as they should, as everyone should, George Santos doesn't belong within 100 miles of Congress. But then you have Clyde Shavers, who Democrats are like, oh, no, it's fine. He can, you know, oh, yeah, welcome Clyde Shavers. Welcome to Olympia to do the people's business. I'm really shocked at the lack of self-awareness from Democrats in Olympia. I found out that Clyde Shavers, you know, they get their committee assignments. Guess what committee he's on? He got assigned to the Veterans Committee. you have to be kidding me. So I went back and looked at the first meeting of the Veterans Committee. And he introduced himself.
Good morning, Clyde Shavers from the 10th, all of Island County and parts of Skagit and Snohomish counties. Thank you.
A lot of responses to this from veterans, calling it, you know, slap in the face, saying this is Democrats spitting in our face. Democrats don't care about veterans. And, you know, I think Here's my struggle here. He's in Olympia. It's clear that they're not going to make some sort of active effort to ask him to resign. He's not going to remove himself. And so if he's there, you want him to be able to be productive, right? But I just think this is another example of rewarding dishonest behavior. And yes, he's a veteran. So in any other circumstance, I think having him on the Veterans Committee makes a lot of sense. But we have a ton of veterans in Washington State. And, you know, I would say the vast, vast majority of them have never lied about their military service. And so to have someone who committed, in my opinion, stolen valor by inflating what he did in the military, to me, it is a slap in the face for the veterans, the honest veterans out there who he is now tasked with serving in Olympia. And just so you know how committee assignments happen, it is caucus leaders who decide committee assignments. So not only is Democratic leadership in Olympia not condemning Clyde Shavers, not asking for Clyde Shavers to resign, they made the decision to put someone who lied about his military service on a committee for veterans issues. I just don't understand how you could have that little self-awareness for how this would go over with people. And to me, it is a slap in the face. It's like, yeah, we're going to let him be here. And oh, yeah, this guy who lied about his military service, we're going to let him serve veterans. It is absolutely absurd. I've already heard from some of you who said you've reached out to Eastside Weight Loss Clinic to try their program after hearing that I lost 25 pounds in 60 days. And I've got about 15 left to go. And some of you asked, well, what do you like about it? You know, what's different about it? And to me, what I didn't want is I didn't want a weight loss plan where I'd have to buy like prepackaged meals, for instance, and just eat these sad shakes and bars and stuff. Because that just doesn't really fit very well with my lifestyle. And I think they're kind of gross. And so one of the things I liked about the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan is, you know, they tell you exactly what to do. You can cook at home. I can eat at restaurants. You're eating real food. You're just grocery shopping for yourself. No prepackaged stuff. And I didn't have to go into an office. So I did go in initially to meet with Dr. Coogan, but I didn't have to go in every week to weigh myself and to check in. So it's really convenient. And if you want, you can do the program entirely virtual. You don't have to come to Dr. Coogan's office in Kirkland at all. And so those things were really great for me. And also, it doesn't require strenuous exercise. I tried to get a bunch of steps in during the program, just stay moving. But that isn't part of, you know, if you're like, I don't have time to get to the gym for an hour, you don't have to do it on this program. So those were all things I really liked about it. And obviously I liked the results. I lost several inches off my waist, off my legs, off my arms. And so I'm just feeling much better and really excited to go wedding dress shopping in a couple weeks. So if you'd like to try the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan, you can visit them at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Schedule a free consultation with Dr. Coogan, or if you prefer, you can give him a call, 425-354-3020. We've been trying to track some good bills, bad bills in Olympia this legislative session, and this one hit my radar. A couple of you tagged me in some social media posts about it. It's House Bill 1333. And it has to do with domestic violent extremism. It says it's an act relating to establishing the Domestic Violent Extremism Commission. Oh, I'm already like, oh, great. First of all, do you need a government state at the state level commission to investigate domestic extremism? Like, isn't that what the FBI is for? I'm not sure what politicians being involved in that is going to do. And the more I read this, the stupider I think it is, and I'll get into that in a moment. It says, the Domestic Violent Extremism Commission is established within the Office of the Attorney General for the purpose of establishing a comprehensive public health and community-based framework for responding to domestic violent extremism. Okay. It is the intent of this section to build upon the research and findings of the domestic terrorism study assembled by the State Attorney General in 2022. Now, before we dive into this, do I think that domestic terrorism and domestic extremism are a real issue? Of course I do. Of course I do. I'm not blind to that. But again, I think that this is going to prove, like a lot of other commissions that are established by politicians, to be something that doesn't accomplish anything, is a waste of taxpayer money, is hyper-focused on identity and is done to make people feel good about themselves. And just reading who would make up this commission if it's established already proves this point. So it says, commission must consist of the following members: 4 legislators, 1 appointed by each of the 2 largest caucuses of the Senate, and 1 appointed by each of the 2 largest caucuses of the House of Representatives. So 1 Democrat, 1 Republican from the House and Senate. A representative of the governor's office, appointed by the governor. A representative from the attorney general's office. A representative from the American Civil Liberties Union. A representative from the Anti-Defamation League, a representative with expertise in public health, what does public health have to do with domestic extremism? Maybe they'll explain that. 6 representatives from organizations representing groups that may include but are not limited to the following: a representative from the Black African American community, a representative from the Muslim community, from the Jewish community, from the Asian or Asian American community, from the Sikh community, from the Latinx community, from the LGBTQ community, from the immigrant refugee community. Okay. You could have just said everyone but white people. Let's see here. The commission must extend an invitation to participate in the commission to the following: a representative from the FBI, a representative from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and a representative from a federally recognized tribe. So let's get into what the intent of this commission would be. The duties of the commission include, but are not limited to, identifying community-led and evidence-based solutions to combat disinformation and misinformation, address early signs of radicalization, and develop public health-style responses. So this is going to be a ministry of truth about domestic extremism, is what I read that to say. It goes on to say it will evaluate any future data tracking recommendations around domestic violent extremism, including how data is collected, what triggers data collection, and how to ensure data is not disproportionately used against Black, Indigenous, and people of color or other communities. Went on to say it will evaluate current legal tools, both civil and criminal, and make recommendations for potential new legislation and regulations to address domestic violent extremism. Okay. Let's get beyond the fact that this isn't necessary. Again, I think domestic violent extremism or domestic extremism, domestic terrorism is a real issue in the country. I don't think that a commission established by the state legislature in Washington is going to do anything meaningful to address it whatsoever. I think it's going to be a bunch of people sitting around a table talking about, like, white man bad. But also, to me, the most obvious domestic extremism, domestic terrorism issue that we face in Washington state is Antifa. I have been a reporter here for 13 years. Who have I seen do the most destruction, violence, vandalism out in the open in pursuit of a political cause? Antifa. It's not even close. But do you really think that this commission is going to take a serious look at Antifa at all? Of course not. Of course not. Antifa is the far left extremism in Washington state we have seen manifest on our streets over and over and over. Look at the summer of 2020. Look what happened at Chaz Cha. People armed with rifles patrolling a quote-unquote autonomous zone where they declared their independence from the government and people were killed there. Have we seen any sort of investigation from the Attorney General's office? Of course not. And the fact that nobody sees how truly awful that is just blows my mind. I mean, some of us see it. But the fact that the government just ignores it, because again, it was done in the pursuit of quote-unquote social justice. Yeah, the Black kids who died at CHOP was social justice in action. Good one. And yeah, I mean, when we look at the riot in downtown Seattle, the windows that were broken, the places, the businesses that were looted to the studs, that's domestic extremism. That is, in my estimation, domestic terrorism. The stuff, the businesses that were lit on fire in Seattle, the construction trailers that were lit on fire, that was done in the pursuit of a political cause. But you didn't see these same legislators, these same Democrats, call it domestic extremism or domestic terrorism. Of course not, because to them it's about politics. They're putting affiliation before action. They don't care about the actions someone are committing. They care about what those actions are in furtherance of. So if it's right-wingers down at the governor's mansion jump in the gates, that's domestic terrorism. And I agree. But if it is left-wing rioters who claim six square blocks of a city, including a police precinct for their own, and patrol it with their own rifles and shoot and kill people, then that's fine. And that really tells you all you need to know about whether this commission on domestic extremism is going to do a damn thing. The following segment is presented in partnership with Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. I did not get a chance to discuss this on the Friday show because it actually dropped after I got done taping. But hallelujah, something to celebrate in Olympia just happened. So we have been railing for a year about the really misguided police pursuit law that was passed by the majority party in Olympia back in 2021. And it drastically limited when police could pursue suspects. It led to thousands of people just fleeing traffic stops, a degradation of law and order, a degradation of public safety. And to me, going into this legislative session, I was really skeptical that they would fix it. You know, Democrats made a lot of promises about public safety leading up to the November election, but then in December, I didn't see a single bill from Democrats that had been pre-filed ahead of the session to fix the pursuit law. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. You have to prioritize that this session. And then on Friday, we find out there were two bills dropped, one in the House, one in the Senate, and they are both bipartisan. You know, I love a good bipartisan bill. And they would essentially revert the pursuit law back to how it was in a lot of ways. And they would return the decision-making to individual officers to rely on their judgment and their training to decide whether pursuing a suspect is in the best interest of public safety. And that's what makes sense. And so I was so pleased to see. And I really think, as much as I rail on some of the decisions made by lawmakers, and criticism is important, I've said positive reinforcement is also important. So when you push for something, criticize, all of that, and then you see a positive outcome from that, positive reinforcement is so, so important for elected leaders. And so that's why I wanted to discuss this today, because I want to make sure we're not just complaining. We're also celebrating little wins. So really quickly, just I'm going to do an explainer on what these bills do, because they're matching, so they do the same thing. So the law as it read in 2021, and what was so problematic about it, is it did not allow a vehicular pursuit unless there was probable cause to believe that a person in the vehicle had committed or was committing a violent offense or sex offense or an escape. Or there was reasonable suspicion that the person in the vehicle committed driving under the influence. And so it really limited the situations where officers could chase someone. And it set this bar at probable cause for violent offenses, which is a really high bar to meet in the moment. So what the change would do is it would really simplify things. I'm going to read it to you. The new bills would change the law to this. A peace officer may not conduct a vehicular pursuit unless there is reasonable suspicion to believe that a person in the vehicle has committed or is committing a criminal offense, and the safety risks of failing to apprehend or identify the person are considered to be greater than the safety risks of the vehicular pursuit under the circumstances. So that is much simpler. It just says criminal offense. It doesn't specify what kind of offense it has to be. And it just says, is the risk greater if you pursue, or is the risk greater to the public if you don't pursue and that person takes off into the community? The two bills, by the way, if you want their numbers, House Bill 1363 and Senate Bill 5352. So it's really promising to me that these have been brought forth on a bipartisan basis. Now, there were Republicans who in December pre-filed bills just like this, but they're in the minority party, and so, you know, Democrats weren't going to move those. But now that there's Democrat names on them, that's very helpful because it makes it much more politically palatable for leadership to be able to say, okay, this is a priority of ours. See, we're going to fix this. But here's the thing, and here's where I need help from all of you. The people who are going to decide whether these bills are prioritized and whether they move are the chairs of the Senate Law and Justice Committee and the House Public Safety Committee. That is Senator Manka Dhingra, a Democrat, and Representative Roger Goodman, a Democrat. And so a really good thing for you guys to do today is to email both of them and to, in a very polite way, tell them why it's important to you that these two bills move forward past their committees. So the email for Senator Monka Dhingra is Monka, M-A-N-K-A, dot Dhingra, D-H-I-N-G-R-A, at ledge.wa.gov. And I have these on my Patreon page, by the way. Representative Roger Goodman, his email is roger.goodman at ledge.wa.gov. So reach out to them if you've got some time today. These things matter. It's not enough, like I said, just to complain about things that are going on. We have to take action. And when thousands and thousands of people call and email, that does make a difference. Absolutely. We need to take these matters into our own hands. So email both of them. And also, it doesn't hurt to contact your directly elected legislators for your district. You can actually do that at future42.org. They have a little district finder where you can plug in your address and see who your representatives are, who your senator is, and that's a really good thing to always have so that if there's any bills you want to email them about or let them know your opinion on, you can find their information there. The previous segment was brought to you in partnership with Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, speaking of making things happen by taking action, I got an email from a viewer. She didn't want me to use her name, totally understandable. But she said she emailed because we just had, conversations about, hey, you need to be your own watchdog and do things. And she's like, I've never submitted a news tip to an agency, but I wanted to do this. So I have been super critical of basically all COVID mandates. I mean, particularly the vaccine mandates and the fact that they're still in place. It doesn't make any sense in the world to me. But, you know, there are some of them where I'm like, okay, from a political perspective for Democrats, whatever, they're doing, this is politics. And they can try to justify it. And there are ways they try to justify it. But this viewer let me know about something that happened to her that I would challenge anyone to justify or to find a valid justification for. So what she said is that she is currently taking a professional course, a night class at the University of Washington. And this is just a one-off that she's doing. She hasn't taken, she's not taken any other classes at the University of Washington. She's already a professional. She's got this one course that she's taking at night to kind of just improve her resume and help her be a better professional, etc. So it's great. People do this, right? She said she realized that she got this email and she provided me with the email saying that she had been dropped from the course. And she was like, well, that's super strange. The email said, we're informing you that your course is being dropped because you did not complete your COVID verification. And she thought, well, that's weird. Why? This is a 5-week course and it's entirely online. What COVID verification would I need to complete? And then she finds out that at the University of Washington, their existing policy, and I pulled up the page, she sent me the link to it, for professional and continuing education at the University of Washington. Their website says, all UW professional and continuing education students, including fully online students, are required to be vaccinated against COVID-19 unless they receive a medical or religious exemption. Including fully online students. So here you have someone who is taking one course through the University of Washington, one course to further their education, a night class, entirely online, no need to come to campus at all. She finds out she's been dropped from the course because she didn't provide proof of a COVID-19 vaccine, something that she said hadn't even crossed her mind because she's like, why would I even think that I would need to provide proof of a COVID-19 vaccine to take this course online? So I reached out to the University of Washington on this and I basically said, hey, can you try to help me understand why this is still the policy for virtual students. Victor Bolta, who's a spokesperson for the University of Washington, told me this. Students in fully remote programs are currently held to the same COVID-19 vaccination requirements as other students. This was primarily due to the issue of UW student health systems not being able to easily distinguish students in fully online programs as compared to other students, and the fact that online students maintain access to campus facilities, such as libraries, classroom buildings, and other study spaces. He went on to say, we are, however, in the process of evaluating that requirement for students in fully remote programs. I hope that helps, he said. It does help. It still doesn't make any sense. If your policy is, hey, to come to campus, you have to be vaccinated, fine. Then don't give online students access to campus. You can't tell me that it's that hard to distinguish whether someone is an online student or someone is a student taking a course in person. You can distinguish that. It's very obvious. And so the fact that you had this woman who was dropped from a course, she was able to provide what they needed and get back in the course. But like I said, she just had not been expecting to have to do that. It was very strange for her, and it really caught her off guard. I'm happy to hear the University of Washington is in the process of evaluating this because, again, you can't give me any. There is no explanation that you could give me, including the one that Victor just gave me. I'm grateful that he took the time to respond, but there's no explanation you can give me that can account for this, making sense. If someone is taking a class from the comfort of their home, their vaccination status should not be an issue for the university. It shouldn't be any of the university's business. There's a really interesting article out from Axios that talks about how younger people are identifying as independents in greater numbers than boomers, for instance. And I don't remember who we were having this conversation about with on the show, but I was saying, you know, I really think that young people are heading towards sort of an independent streak because their entire lives so far, for some of them, they've only seen this incredibly dysfunctional political system, this very polarized political system, a polarized press. And I think if you've only known that, why would you ever want to be part of it? And so this Axios, so it's a Gallup survey that's been conducted from 1988 to present. And it asks people what they identify as. And for a while, you know, you had a pretty even number in the like 30 percentile who identified as either Republican or Democrat. And now in 2022, you have just 28% of people identifying as Democrat, 28% identifying as Republicans, and 41% identifying as independent. And that margin is much greater when it comes to young people. So one-third of baby boomers right before the midterm election said they identified as independent. 52% of millennials, so that's me, I'm an elder millennial, and Gen Z, which is the generation after me, identify as independent. And I really do think, and this attributes that to this really divisive nature of things and just how partisan things have become. And I think that's true. I really believe that you are going to have this movement not only towards being independent and shirking party labels, but an active rejection of the political parties. And dare I say, libertarianism. For some of these young people, think about what their high school experience was like and their college experience was like. Some of them, you know, missed out on their high school years almost entirely or their college years almost entirely because of COVID and these mandates and restrictions. And they've grown up in this era where the government has such a huge say and influence over their lives like never before. And so I do think as crappy as things are right now, I think particularly for Gen Z, you're going to have this independent streak that starts to show itself in a very meaningful way. And so for Republicans and Democrats, capturing or tapping into that independent streak is going to be key. And again, I also think libertarianism is going to have a moment in the next few years. I mean, you know, libertarian presidential and vice presidential candidates have never done very well, but you've seen more and more of them run successfully for public office at the local level. And I think if they can really cater their message to young people, which is, you know, very limited government interference in your life, then I think that that could be successful. So I was happy to see this because I think most people, if they're honest with themselves, don't identify with a political party. They just sort of throw their lot in with whoever they're closer to. And then that's really all you have to choose from on a ticket. It's like a Democrat or a Republican. So what I'm hoping happens in the next few years is more independent candidates or nonpartisan candidates come forward, get on the ballot, even more libertarian candidates. And we have this growing sort of choice, and it can become a real choice for Americans about, you know, Americans who might feel independent actually being able to have a choice on the ballot that reflects how they feel. All right, we'll end the show with some comments. I had a lot of positive feedback about my Fridays with Friends interview this past week with Kristen Olson, who is the host of the Rational in Portland podcast. And she told this awesome story about how, you know, she's a trial attorney and she was really disappointed. And she was a progressive, by the way, disappointed in the state of Portland in how the homeless crisis was being treated as a housing crisis and not a drug crisis. So she starts speaking out on this podcast using a pseudonym because she didn't want, she was scared that she'd be vilified, that it would hurt her business. And then she's like, you know what? It's too important. I'm going to speak out with my real name. And none of her fears about speaking out have come true. And she's really part of this growing movement on the West Coast to bring sanity back into the conversation, particularly around homelessness.
Long term, I think it can happen. I think it's going to be incremental. It's going to take time and patience. But Rational in Portland is now mainstream. We're no longer having these conversations in hushed tones with pseudonyms. People want to come on and they want to talk about these issues candidly. More good people need to speak out. You know, more people like you, Brandy. We need more shows like yours. We've got to fill this vacuum of discussions and we need to talk to each other. And good people need to speak out and talk about these issues and talk about the real data.
It's what I've been preaching to folks. You know, I think the middle is sometimes scared, the common sense, rational middle, scared to say something for the reasons that you articulated. They're scared to be attacked. They're scared to be vilified. They're scared people will come after their employer. And at some point you have to decide, is it worth it or is it not worth it? And you decided that it's worth it. Did any of your fears come true about what would happen to you?
No. In fact, we've gained business. And some of my clients, even when I was under a pseudonym, would say things like, I know that you're doing this and God bless you for doing it. And these were people that I thought would think I was the devil and would just drop me like a hot coal. And that hasn't happened. I think they're just, people are curious. They actually are intellectually curious. They just don't have the time or the money to sit down and dig into this kind of stuff. And I'm sure you found that too, Brandy. Yeah. I mean, look at this huge vacuum that you filled. Look at your followers on social media. Look at the people that are turning to you for their news. They're not tuning in to Como. They're tuning in to you and Jonathan Cho.
And you guys loved what she had to say. Julie said, finally, common sense is coming back. Bless you for being a voice for common sense. Let's see. Kevi said her words were very inspiring. Pat said, people are afraid to speak out, but there's a larger group that think the pendulum will swing the other way, even if they stay silent. The biggest problem are the citizens that vote based on party, regardless of policy or beliefs. I totally agree with that. Let's see. Patricia said, to those of us who are sick of Seattle, we're grateful for anyone with a voice having that has a way to address some of these issues. Let's end with Melinda. It's sad. I've heard so many friends not willing to even discuss politics, yet so many times we can find common ground. And that's true. I think that there are a lot of common sense people in the middle who just sort of stay out of the scrum. And I get it. It can be a really vicious place to be, but you are the majority. And so if more and more people are willing to, like Kristen Olson, come forward and say, hey, this isn't right. I believe that there's too much at stake to stay silent. I believe that we can completely take over the conversation and make a difference. And that's what this podcast is about. And that's what a lot of things we discuss on the podcast are about. All right. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I will see subscribers on the Wednesday subscriber show. If you're not a subscriber already, join us for as little as $5 a month. patreon.com/undivided, or you can become a contributor on my Locals community, brandycruz.locals.com.